are you with Truth News Radio Australia on the 6th of November 2013. I'm your host, Herewood Fenton. It is a great pleasure to be with you today. For the next 2 hours, we're going to be ranging through global issues, issues of justice, issues of extreme importance for our society, for the world, for the future. We're going to be dealing with some Australian topics. We're going to be dealing with some international topics. I have a very important guest coming on in the second hour, John Jones QC, who's going to be talking about the trial of Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, for whom he is the appointed legal counsel with the International Criminal Court. That's going to be a really interesting chat. And also in that discussion, I'm going to have a talk to him about Julian Assange, who he has also represented at different points in time. And I'm going to get a heads up from him on what he thinks the situation there is with the case there with Julian Assange. And we're also going to be talking in that hour about another topic that that John Jones is heavily involved in, which is protection of orangutans in Indonesia. And this is something that dovetails into a topic that I find very important, which is the rampant biofuels industry, which is causing just environmental degradation on an alarming degree all around the world. And one of the impacts of that is actually loss of habitats of animals, particularly orangutans in Indonesia. So it's going to be a really interesting discussion in hour two. But in hour one, I want to actually return to the rant from last week, but I want to now bring my great friend and confidant, Josh Jackson, in. Josh, are you there?
Yes.
Josh,
I'm here.
It is great to have you aboard. Josh, last week I had a bit of a rant about Russell Brand, and the reason was is that I'd been actually a bit of a fan of Russell Brand, and I'd seen some of his great interviews there on the Alex Jones show, and the fact that he seemed to be open about some of the hidden things about our society, about the elites that are controlling things, and he obviously seemed to be open to topics which are somewhat taboo in the mainstream, and I thought, well, this guy is and he's famous, he's doing a world tour, and he's very, very well known amongst the average the young population. And I thought, fantastic, yeah. All power to him. But then, as I actually started listening to what Russell Brand was talking about, and was only really last week when I watched the Waxman interview that he did, the BBC Waxman interview, and I realised, my goodness, he's actually advocating the most sort of a Stalinist kind of attitude towards wealth redistribution, and I was like, wow, I didn't know that that's what this guy was on about, and I realized that actually is what he's on about, and so I went into a pretty strong rant about that, and I spent a large part of last week's show basically talking about why this is perhaps a gross misunderstanding. Maybe it's maybe it's a lack of knowledge of history, but there is a real problem here with, I find, this soft resurgence of these ideas of wealth redistribution. Over to you, because yeah. I know you're following this very closely.
Well, I still am a fan of the guy. I mean, he's a funny guy. Everyone has different... I think people are generally pissed off. They're pissed off with what they're seeing. They're pissed off with the forests. They're pissed off with the plastic. They're pissed off with the oil industry. And they're pissed off with the global warming propaganda. They're pissed off with, I mean, from every which way, the endless wars, it goes on and on. And then on top of that, we've got this massive European crisis. You've got a massive American currency crisis. It's just on and on. And, I mean, we as people are actually probably living the best we have for a long, in history. I mean, we're the wealthiest at the moment. We've got, there's a whole lot of positive sides.
Yes.
But there's a whole lot of negative. And we strive to constantly become better, no matter how much better we are now compared to what we were. I mean, someone that's been tortured horrifically his whole life, and then just thrown in prison at the end, and but is not tortured anymore, isn't any much, you know, it's a lot better than what it was, but he could always be better off by being out of prison. So,
yeah.
So, you know, there is always strive to move forward, and I think a lot of people can then just get so angry at and blame the rich, and this has happened. I mean, this is typical. This is nothing new. You saw it in the French Revolution.
Mm.
People just go, "Eat the rich, you son of a," you know.
Yeah.
And that's the call. And I totally understand it. I mean, it's the first thing you think is, "You bastards."
But of course, immediately there is a problem, isn't there, in defining who the so-called elites or so-called, you know, super rich are, where you draw the line. There becomes a big problem because it's not really a line, it's a spectrum. It's a gradation from people who are very poor and very struggling to people who are battlers, who are sort of doing okay but still sort of poor, to people who are the middle class, the lower middle class, the upper middle class.
Yeah.
Then, you know, and really it's just a giant continuum, isn't it? Where do you draw the line and say, well, these are the rich and these are the, you know, these are the ones who are the bad people because they've got too much money, and these are the ones that are the ones with whom we have solidarity because they are not the rich. How do you draw that line?
Yeah. That's exactly right. And the actual, I mean, what it comes down to as well is it's a philosophical question. What do you want? What do you want as a problem? What is the problem, and then what is the solution? And if the problem is violence, which generally, when you think about the problems, it's usually a cause of a monopoly on violence, on the initiation of force. You have this these people that have a control over law, and so these massive corporations that are super wealthy and super rich basically get in bed with through the conduit of lobbyists with these big power structures that are holding the gun, which are the only people allowed to hold the gun. And when I say the gun, I mean the law. Like, if you break it, they come to your house and they throw you into prison. So. When these huge corporations jump in bed, and this is, you know, why a lot of people now are starting to see the truth and the reality behind it, is that really it is just the the bullies. Let me step back a bit. It is you have this feeling that you've got this vote, but really your vote is nothing compared to MGM Studios or Coca-Cola, or, you know, these people have a real vote, because at the end of the day, the vote is money, depending on, in most places of the world. And so when you think then, oh, well, the vote's money, then it's the richest fault, you know.
Yeah.
And so... we have this thing, and then what you think is, well, what's the solution? What's the solution behind all of this? And, well, it's more laws. You know, we need to crack down on these rich. We need to destroy them, and we need to basically redistribute their wealth. And when you think about that concept, it's totally ridiculous, because the rich redistribute the wealth by themselves. And I know that's a strange thing to say to a lot of people, but if you know of one rich person that sits on their money, on their wealth, that just sits on it and does nothing with it. I mean, there's a lot of speculation which can push up wheat prices and all the rest, but a lot of the time these rich people are starting businesses. They're risking, you know, and this is where greed is important, because what it does, greed actually helps redistribute wealth. I mean, if you look at...
Are you saying greed is good?
Carrie Packer Jr., whatever his name is, he he's lost a lot of money building these casinos. I mean, right. He built these massive casinos around the world, and they've pretty much gone bust. Now, what's happened there? He's lost a lot of money, but where's that money gone? It's gone to the people building these things, the bricks and mortar, the people laying the foundations and building the machines and all the rest of it. And that is the redistribution of wealth. It was a risk. Greed made Packer risk a lot of money on the chance that he might make more money, but the risk didn't pay off. And what happened during that process is he employed, and even if it did take off, I mean, even if the casinos did work, there'll be a lot of people employed. And yeah, they might not be employed by the massive amount, but they'll be employed and they'll be getting money. They're redistributed. And so,
I mean, gambling isn't the best example because, you know, then people will say, oh, well, it's the people that are the working class that are going there gambling, and then that money's being siphoned off to the workers there. But generally, I mean, people start TV studios, they start, you know, and a lot of people work there, or they... So the rich generally don't just have a big pile of money and they sit on it and think, yay, it's out of here.
Indeed.
They start businesses. I mean, so
of course there are the entrenched oligarchies that just have so much wealth that for them starting a business really is no risk. And because they control all the businesses, and the entrenched super elites do exist.
Yeah.
And I think when
these aren't the people that the people of the French Revolution go after.
Well, know, no, they tend to be above it, don't they? I mean, they tend to avoid, when these revolutions occur, these super elites actually don't even get touched. I mean, that seems to be the way it works, although it's a bit hard to really know because the super elites are very secretive in terms of how they operate.
No, they go after the guy that's got, you know, a few million bucks, have got, oh, look, he's got a Porsche, get him. You know, it's the people that have worked hard and or managed to invest well or has received inheritance. It's people with even multiple millions, but they aren't rich compared to the people actually controlling stuff.
Yes, the people that the families, the dynasties that control the banking system itself. It's on a whole other plane, isn't it?
It's on a whole other plane. And I mean,
it is indeed very difficult to sometimes differentiate for people the difference between sort of wealth and uber wealth. But look, we'll get back onto that. We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today, and I hope you enjoy the show. I hope that if you have any thoughts about it, indeed, that you get in touch. Have a look at our website, our brand new redesigned website with mobile optimization. Very easy to use on your smartphone now. And, you know, if there's something you'd like me to talk about, send me an email and let me know. If you're actually interested in coming on the show, let me know. This show is about really giving a voice to the voiceless. So, if you know, really what we want is your contribution. Josh, so we were just there discussing this question about the difference between the rich and the uber rich. But the point being that that Russell Brand and people that think the way he does, and perhaps you might say, well, he's a little naive. But I think a lot of people are a little naive. But a lot of people sort of don't clearly differentiate between the fact that, you know, yeah, I mean, a guy that sort of is an entrepreneur that started a business that, that made a few million, right, is a guy who worked damn hard for his wealth, you know what I mean, and took massive risks. And, and what really scares me, because what really scares me, Josh, is that whenever these revolutions have happened in the past, it's just that sort of guy who gets taken down by these revolutionaries. And because he's easy to attack, you know what I mean? He doesn't actually have the resources that the super rich have. But he has a lot of wealth, and it's usually there out there. Everyone can see it. And they go, yeah, we're going to take it from him, right? And And one, I think actually the super rich probably think that's great. When they see that happening, they think, well, that's great. Yeah, let them keep thinking that that's the problem and we'll just stay, we'll lie low, you know.
Well, they love it. They love it because it grows government. Because who takes the money? Who takes the money from these people? Who you know, usually it's more government. They just make more laws, say, oh, okay, well everyone wants, you know, first of all, it's these sort of, you know, in the past been everyone – running into a home and just killing these people, but
yes,
you know, nowadays it's probably just a whole heap of people saying we need, you know, more taxation. And I mean, I've got a good example of this this whole thing, because Russell Brand mentioned tax havens and to get rid of tax havens. And so we've got Gibraltar. I was just recently in Gibraltar. Is to visit my brother who works there.
Oh, really?
And, so Gibraltar is a little island that is off of the bottom of Spain. It's a quite an interesting place because right there you've got Africa and Morocco. You've got England in terms of Gibraltar because it's an English colony. And then you've got Spain, and it's all very tight, right?
Yeah.
It's all extremely tight. And the interesting thing about that is Gibraltar is this tax-free zone. So anyone there can start a business and you have no tax. I mean, I think it's like $10,000 flat rate and then that's it, you know, no matter how much you earn. So a lot of companies are going there and just setting up. Now, what's happening is there's so much work on this island. I mean, because there's so many companies starting up, but it's becoming ridiculously expensive to live because it's a tiny little island. So of what people do is cross the little border into Spain and live in Spain, in La Línea, it's called. And the thing is, now all the prices are starting to go up in La Línea because you've got these very wealthy people who work in Gibraltar living there, spending a lot. So the people that don't work in Gibraltar, working in La Línea, can't afford normal things. I mean, this isn't, I mean, they can, but it, because it's happening slowly, you know, inflation happens slowly, but it's a different type of inflation. It's more of a, hey, all of a sudden there's, you know, instead of an auction room full of everyone with $100 in their hand, there's an auction room with most people with $1,000 in their hand. So of course everything goes up and up at the auction a little bit because there's more people to bid on things. So anyway, what's happening is that it's forcing these prices up in La Línea. Now, what Russell Brand and people like that would say is, get rid of the tax haven. But what's happening there is you just need more laws, more violence, more things to control everyone, when really what should happen is that La Línea should become tax-free zone. Because then more business would start off in Spain.
Right.
And then that would redistribute across the people working there. And you'd get an influx of people, you'd get an influx of infrastructure being built because the businesses would need it. and stuff would happen like this.
But of course, this whole situation began because the taxation systems in the Western countries are so outrageous. They're so extreme that it's just impossible to get ahead. It's really hard to be an entrepreneur, and that applies to Australia. It applies to the UK. It probably applies to much of Europe. It's just really hard, isn't it? So businesses, if you want to succeed and you want to do something original and really make it, you know, a successful business, you're sort of forced to look for tax havens, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. Especially when it comes to employing people and all sorts. I mean, you see this huge rush to China, I mean, over the past 10 years of because these a lot of these minimum wage laws, and I can understand the draw of minimum wage laws as well. I mean, this is getting slightly off topic.
Well, it's part of it. Yeah, minimum wage is part of it. But I think minimum wage, again, I'll let you continue. But yeah, it's a very important point. But yeah, please continue.
Yeah, so I mean, minimum wage, and it sounds, you know, of course you want people to not have to work 8 hours and get a penny, you know. Even in these places where minimum wage doesn't exist, or it's ridiculously low, people generally don't tend to work for, you know, 8 hours a day for the tiniest bit. What they do is they say, well, you know, the other factory is giving me one penny more, and they apply for there and they go there. I mean, people don't work in these places because it's worse than the farms. They work there because it's actually paying them better, and it's a horrible existence for sure. I'm not saying it's not, but it actually what happens is that the middle classes rise. You can see this in China. I mean, the middle class has risen dramatically. They're having huge inflation because everyone's getting wealthier and wealthier, they started off making Nike shoes for ridiculous, but now they're starting to earn a lot more. I mean, the factories are costing more, and what will happen is eventually the factories cost so much more that because the workers will get stronger and they'll demand more. And look, the thing is, I tend to listen to myself and think, God, you heartless bastard.
Yeah.
But even if you have a minimum wage law, even if you come in and say everyone should be paid at least $300 an hour, you know, I mean, you just set it ridiculously high. Well, what would happen? And I mean, it would cause a person that has a business to get rid of all of his employees, because it's just you just can't survive on that. And you either go broke or you try to find somewhere where it doesn't have that, or you try to find an alternative, like a machine, to take over the work. But if you so really it's difficult to
summarize, I think, you know, the connection here between taxation and what you're saying, minimum wage, it's a state intervention. It's a nanny state kind of intervention that is designed to kind of create a level playing field to make sure that, you know, no one gets left behind. And that sounds like a good thing. And of course, this is the constant refrain of socialist theory, is that it sounds like it comes from a good place. It sounds like it's trying to intervene for the benefit of all, and it's saying, well, some people are going to have to sacrifice a little and others are going to benefit. We're just going to break. We'll continue with this after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be with you. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I'm talking today to Josh Jackson about wealth redistribution, Russell Brand, and the sort of the general popular sentiment that a lot of people have, and I believe that that Russell Brand is actually going to accentuate and contribute to, that that the solution to a lot of the world's problems will be this kind of socialist wealth redistribution. And, you know, one of the things that Russell Brand said in that interview was that profit should be considered a filthy word. Wow, you know...
If I could just quickly end up with a minimum wage.
Yeah, please continue.
What also happens, if someone raises the minimum wage, everything else just goes up in price. So then, you know, the minimum wage that you gave them is actually not worth it, because a bottle of beer or some bread or whatever is worth – it costs more for you to get. So your minimum wage then just doesn't – really cut it anymore, so they need to raise it again and again and again.
Well, actually, interesting point is that raising the minimum wage is usually done in response to inflation, isn't it? And it's usually done because the buying power of the money is weaker year by year, and so the government comes in and says, well, we'll have to raise the minimum wage.
Yeah, meanwhile, they're printing like crazy in the back room.
Yeah, so raising the minimum wage, does it really help people or not? I wonder, because if the prices of everything are going up anyway, then it's just monopoly money. I mean, sure, it's money with bigger numbers on it, but it's not buying you anything more. And people who are on the minimum wage have a terrible time. I mean, the minimum wage in Australia is still very hard to make a living on. You're almost better being on the dole than being on the minimum wage in Australia.
Well, this is true. You can either be on the dole and have to work nothing,
yeah,
or you can be on minimum wage but work 8 hours a day and earn all of like $10 more.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, screw it. I'm going surfing.
Yeah.
And being, just have, instead of eating, pasta, I'll eat 2 minute noodles.
Exactly.
10 cents cheaper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's just there's so many things wrong with this whole set of ideas, isn't there? But it's all sort of – it all comes together in this socialist nanny state ideology, political theory, which is assumed – a lot of people assume it without ever thinking it through, without ever really considering it. And I wish Russell Brand, smart man and a guy
well, this
who –
is why, this you know, is why I can't blame ignorance with the guy.
Yeah,
you can't just be a quite well-spoken guy that knows a lot of history and this and that, makes good jokes about him. I mean, he's a funny guy.
Yeah,
and then come out with this. It seems almost evil, because you know we've seen National Socialism. We've seen we've seen the despots of crushing. The middle class through these sort of price controls and stuff. And it's so easy, like I said before, to blame the rich. It's so easy because it's like racism. You can just point at the first thing because it's, oh, look, he's a different color or she's a different color, because it's easy.
Yeah.
You know, he's a different color and he's got a job and I'm this color and I don't have a job. So it's the color's fault.
Well, do you know, in the French Revolution, during the Jacobin period, before Napoleon came along, the Jacobins were like a prototype for the Nazis or the Stalinist era or whatever you might think of that came later. But the Jacobins, you know, they kind of thought up a few of these things for the first time, you know, and they brought in these really, really draconian ways of determining who was the elite, who was the aristocrat, and who wasn't. And they also employed a lot of spies, because one of the things is that you inevitably start recruiting spies to do your job when you're in this kind of giant social program of change, because there's so many people in the world, right? And you have to infiltrate and you have to try and find out. And so this is what happened in the French Revolution, and these spies were everywhere, and they would see someone who was dressed nicely, you know, wearing a nice hat, and then they would denounce that person to the council. And then the next day that person would be arrested with no due process, that person would be arrested and then later executed. And that happened. Thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And you might say, well, that was just a one-off. That was just the French Revolution. Well, no, it happened in Cambodia in the 1970s. Exactly the same thing happened in Cambodia.
And it'll happen again and again, because when you think about what is wealth, imagine you right now, dear listener, you've got $300 in, or $1,000 in your savings, but everyone else has got $100.
Yeah, well, you're the 1%, aren't you? Then they're the 99%. You're the 1%. Bad.
You're the 1%. What happens then? They literally come and to redistribute your wealth, which you're doing anyway, because you're trying to, you started businesses and you've helped in your local area and you've given to some charity. But they just come and they just arrest you and pass laws to basically take all your money away. What happens? You have to shut your business. You have to, I mean, it's not a fanciful thing of saying, well, because the reality is you can only do it with violence, with extreme violence. And you think, yeah, good, well, the rich should be killed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's taking the problem which and blaming the wrong thing. And the actual thing to look at is the entire monetary system and how it's built.
But a lot of people would say, Josh, that you can't sort of bring about radical social change, which is obviously what we want to see. We want to see some radical change without a degree of violence, because the violence is being perpetrated against us. And I mean, I know you believe in nonviolence, but you're also a libertarian. You certainly believe in the right of self-defense.
Yeah.
Correct me. So where does it get to the point where we have to actually consider that the people have a right to defend themselves against being robbed by the ultra concentration of power among the super elites, to the point where, where we are literally being robbed, and so we have to fight back, and that does mean violence in some sense. How do you navigate through that?
Well, for me, I'm a bit of a pussy, really. I mean, I'm not going to stand up in front of the state, which has infinite power, way more hardware than any of us lowly people. Anyway, you just can't fight. What you can do is have a revolution of the mind and ideas, and get people to understand where money's made, how money's made, where it comes from, and how we could change that and start using alternatives. Like Bitcoin, Litecoin, or gold and silver, or other ways of exchange, other mediums of exchange to break away from their system of control. But also, it's to teach the children of the future that authority isn't something to be, bowed down. Like, whenever you say anything, because you're an authority, I have to do it. It's a battle of ideas. But it's also little steps in your own lives, and building communities of people that have a similar philosophy, to trade with those people. And we see things like this happening right now, especially on the Bitcoin side of things, because people are now building dark wallets and ways to trade online without anyone interfering with the trade, but apart from the two people doing it, like two cash trades. In cash, this is nothing new. In cash, it's been happening forever. But online has created this control grid where everything's watched and every transaction's scrutinized. And so, and because more and more businesses online, a percentage now, a huge percentage of business and transactions are done online, that if we can build these mechanisms of mixing and mixing money and not being tracked, we can build a society where we don't have these
brilliant,
ridiculous laws and regulations.
Really, really great idea. The people who want to make a difference have got to find a way to do it that's going to be effective. And You know, maybe taking up arms is not even the most effective way. Maybe what you're saying is. We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. News Radio Australia. We've been talking about wealth redistribution, and we've been trying to analyse why it's wrong, where it's gone wrong. In the remaining segment of this hour, I actually want to turn to another topic. I want to briefly have a chat with you, Josh, about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is a shadowy new deal trade agreement that is currently being negotiated with the Australian government and the US government. And, you know, as we've seen with all of these trade agreements, which are ostensibly there to just promote free trade, and sounds good, doesn't it? Free trade sounds like a good thing. But what we actually find is that so much of these things actually have the opposite of freedom in them. They actually seem to want to bring about restrictions, coercion. They want to hand over more and more power to government monopolies.
Yeah.
And or government corporate sort of partnership and monopolies. Mm. And
just to interject there quickly, just to tell people, you do not need laws in place to have free trade. It's like an oxymoron. It's totally wrong. I mean, you don't need it. You can go up to someone in the street and say, "Hey, wow, that jacket is amazing. Oh, what? How much? And the guy say, "Oh, it's not for sale. It's this much." And if you want it bad enough, there's a price for it, and I'm sure you can get it. But no one is in the way. What happens is that there's these laws. The tax is too high here for exports or whatever, or we have barriers of entry. And so these free trade agreements try to break them down, but they break them down by promising new laws. So they'll take down some, but they'll build others, which are usually even worse.
Yeah, and let me just give you an example of one of the main concerns about this Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is the issues around intellectual property. Now, we've seen various attempts to roll back people's freedom to express themselves or to copy files or to transfer information on the internet from so many different angles. There's been so many different attempts to basically clamp down on the free exchange of information, which is really what the internet is all about. And it's largely coming from corporate interests who see that, they see themselves as being the ones who should benefit, because they believe this, that they have the intellectual property rights, that they are sort of enforcing their rights. They consider it their property when, for example, people share a music file or a torrent, or even sharing links, or even republishing articles that are on the internet. There are so many different forms of what's called copyright infringement now. It's mind-boggling. I mean, even someone's voice can be copyrighted, as we actually saw with the Alex Jones show. Apparently his voice had been copyrighted wrongly by some other third party. But the range of ways in which people can be accused of copyright infringement are quite huge, and we see the measures that are being used to try and crack down on this becoming increasingly tyrannical. Let me just read to you here a direct quote from an article here on the subject of the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Agreement. The TPP seeks, among other things, to rewrite the global rules on intellectual property enforcement that would give big media new powers to lock users out of our own content and services, provide new liabilities that might force ISPs to police our online activity, and give giant media companies even greater powers to shut down websites and remove content at will. It also encourages ISPs to block accused infringers' internet access and could force ISPs to hand over our private information to big media conglomerates without appropriate privacy safeguards. And just one last thing to add to that, the issues of privacy have now increased because there's a new article out on the Financial Review, Australian Financial Review, that indicates that there are terms within this agreement that would mean that your private information could easily be handed over to third parties overseas. Anyway, it's a giant Pandora's box of confusion and tyranny and invasion of privacy. Josh, what's your take on this, my man?
Yeah, it just sounds like extreme overreach of more powers, and they always cloak it in this free trade crap. I mean, yeah. Really, for an example, I bought a song off, there's an embargo against Iran, has been for a long time. No one can really buy anything apart if you're in the America, England, or Europe, or
right.
Australia, most of it with Iran. I can't PayPal or anything to anyone that's selling anything. Anyway, there's a musician there. He was selling some songs that he'd made. He's just a guy. He's trying to get on with life. He's got nothing to do with anything. He's sitting there in his basement making some tunes. And he said, I can't. And I said, I really want to buy this track. And I bought it with Bitcoin. And, I received it. He received the money instantly. I received my track instantly. It's fantastic. So we have free trade, people. We don't need these ludicrous laws coming in that are going to clamp down so hard. I mean, this all started as well with the media companies. You don't, when you buy a song or an ebook, you don't actually buy the ebook. You buy the right to read the ebook, but it's not actually yours.
Yeah.
And look, these are fine in contracts. If the contract's written and you agree to that contract, that's fine. But what these media companies do is then spend billions, trying to lobby governments to force these ludicrous laws into jail people for breaking.
Yeah, I mean, and there are all kinds of laws that are already, written in that would actually make it an infringement of copyright. For example, if you were to sit and read your ebook out loud to more than, three people or something, that's technically an infringement of copyright.
Yeah.
Play a record and other people, you play a CD and other people can hear it, technically that's an infringement of copyright. I mean, technically it is actually. In the absurdity of those laws, and it's very vague, about what it really means when you have the license for something, because technically it's just one, one person can only own one license. But Josh, we're constantly told that these copyright laws are all about protecting the creative property, the individual, the musician, the entrepreneur, maybe the computer software developer, the creative individual who does this wonderful thing of creating something new, and these terrible pirates come along and steal his creation. And it's all about protecting these wonderful people. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, first of all, it never has. My brother was in a very successful band over here in Europe, in the 90s, and he had a record deal with one of these large labels, and basically he had to sell over, like, I don't know, I think it was like 500,000 albums before they even got 3 cents each of the band members. So, I mean, and then they were stuck into these large contracts of multiple albums before they can get out, and and really they didn't do much for the people. I mean, they put the money forward to print these CDs, but You know, that's all gone out the door. It's all MP3s now. Most people can make tracks in their bedroom very cheaply. The artists have never made money. You know, when you look at the amount of musicians, let's just look at musicians because there's film and all that stuff. Yeah,
sure.
But if you look at musicians, you know, the amount of people that make music in this world is astronomical.
Yeah.
Now let's have a look at the super wealthy pop stars and rock stars that have made a lot of money from this paradigm of these massive record labels, and it's literally 0.01% maybe.
Yeah.
You know, it's not even that. I mean, it's all of 60 people a year or something, right?
Yeah.
Artists. And if you look at the rest of the musicians, they're paying through their notes. Like my mother, I come from a family of all musicians. My mother, she's a musician, and she goes to have these concerts. She's singing old Irish songs with her harp around the world, Germany mostly. But she basically gets stalked by this GEMA, which is this music association mafia, which basically count the seats. She can't even market her gigs, because if she does, GEMA will come around, send someone, count. Even if the seats aren't filled, she has to pay for every seat at her concert, even though she's playing uncopyrightable songs.
Really?
From the past. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, there's actually laws to say that she doesn't have to pay them because they are out of copyright. The amount of work she's had to do, weeks and weeks of letter writing and this and that, and then keep convincing them, because they keep coming back because they don't believe that every song is, and you know, oh, what if one isn't? Then, you know, and so it's this whole insidious mechanism built around artists to control them.
And again, this is presented to us as, you know, the laws about copyright are there to protect everyone, to create a level playing field so that we're all safe. It's the same meme that we've seen with taxation, what you're talking about before, and it just doesn't work, does it?
Well, no. I mean, these artists, these venues have to pay so much that they can't even afford to have, you know, people playing music there because they're playing, you know, covers.
Yeah, it's incredible.
They have to shut down the culture and stick poker machines.
Incredible. Josh, unfortunately, we're at the end of the hour. It's been a great chat today. Thanks so much for coming on, mate.
Great, mate. Have a good one.
Yeah, we certainly will have a good one. You're listening to Truth News Australia. We'll be back after this break. Really important interview coming up with John Jones QC. It's worth waiting for. Don't go away. Cheers.